This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 10th October 2010. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 9th of October 2014, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Norma York.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Telephone Fraudsters Targeting the Elderly, We Need Homes, Not Shops, Say Protesters, and Drivers Tracked Over Crash Phones. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Telephone Fraudsters Targeting the Elderly. Warning as con men gain bank and card details. Police are warning residents in Winchester after scams involving fraudsters claiming to be from the Metropolitan Police obtained bank details and cash using bogus telephone calls and couriers. There were 7 reported incidents in Winchester area where people aged between 63 and 87 were targeted by con men attempting to gain their bank and card details or asking them to withdraw cash to assist the police in investigations. They happened on Monday and Tuesday of last week. A 74-year-old woman was told that she had been subjected to a bank fraud and was asked to withdraw £2,000 from her bank by a man claiming to be from the Met. She was told that her bank was being investigated and she shouldn't tell anyone or raise suspicion. A courier arrived to collect the money, along with her bank cards, which were then used to withdraw further money from her accounts. A 63-year-old woman was contacted by a man who claimed to be from the Met Serious Crime Squad and said that he was investigating a Winchester bank over counterfeit money. He asked her to withdraw her money from the bank and to put it in a carrier bag ready for a courier. She withdrew the money but became suspicious and did not hand it over. The remaining people who were targeted all became suspicious and therefore hung up the phone without giving any personal details. As part of the courier fraud scam, the potential victims are often told to hang up their phone and call their bank or call back the police to check the caller's identity. The original caller does not hang up the phone and therefore is able to speak to the victim again when they think they are calling another number as the line is still connected. Detective Inspector Sue Orr said, "People across Hampshire have lost large sums of cash as a result of this fraud, as often the elderly and the vulnerable are targeted. We want to warn residents that these requests are not genuine and that no police officer or bank would operate in this manner. Anyone who receives a suspicious call is urged not to give any details to the caller and report the matter to the police immediately. Any courier companies or taxi drivers that may have been asked to pick up such packages in the area are also urged to report this to the police."
We need homes, not shops, say protesters. Homes, not shops, was the chant that rang over Winchester in a 100-person public protest. People gathered at the Guildhall to show their opposition to the £150 million Silver Hill scheme in the city centre. They are pressing the City Council to force the developer Henderson to include a bus station and 100 affordable homes as originally proposed. Henderson's has dropped the homes because it says they would make the scheme unviable. They say that the main bus operator, Stagecoach, does not want to run a bus station. Instead, the scheme will have more shops and fewer but bigger homes. City Councillor Kim Gottlieb has launched a campaign, Winchester Deserves Better, to persuade the City Council to amend the proposals. Mr. Gottlieb said of the demonstrators, "They all have better things to do in the evening, but they feel strongly enough about it and wanted to come out. So many sensible people can see the nonsense of the scheme. The City Council has just rolled over for the developer." Shopkeeper Ali Galvin, owner of the clothes line, said, "I love Winchester and I don't want to see it become like any other high street. I want it to retain its specialness. To lose the bus station and have seven-storey buildings would be a disaster." Patrick Davies, a former city councillor, said, "Without the 100 affordable homes, the scheme ought not to go ahead." The demo was held just before a full council meeting that was due to discuss the local plan that includes Silver Hill. A new planning application for Silver Hill has been submitted by Henderson. Discussing Silver Hill, council leader Rob Humby said there was no truth in the rumours that Henderson would be entitled to compensation of millions of pounds should the scheme collapse, for whatever reason. He said, "Providing the council meets its obligations under the development agreement, then there is no contractual basis for Henderson to receive any compensation if the contract falls away." And this piece is accompanied by a photograph of all these protesters outside the Guildhall with their posters, which say "Scrapped!" exclamation mark, and then a picture of a house roof with 100 written in it saying "Affordable Homes."
Drivers tracked over crash photos. More than 60 motorists face fines. More than 60 drivers will get tickets for taking pictures of a lorry crash that closed the A34 for 12 hours last week. Police recorded the number plates of motorists spotted using their phones or other devices to photograph the overturned lorry on the A34 north of Winchester last Wednesday. The southbound carriageway was closed until 11:30 a.m. following the incident at 7 a.m. northbound, just before the A303 junction. A police spokesman said the vehicles were moving and it is highly likely officers at the scene recorded number plates in their notebooks. The registered owners will be tracked through the DVLA and a letter sent to ask who was driving at the time. A second letter will be sent to the identified driver, issuing them with a fixed penalty notice or driver awareness course. A police spokesman said the offences committed are for using a handheld phone or a similar device behind the wheel. Typical punishment is 3 penalty points and a £100 fine, but that is decided on a case-by-case basis, according to the spokesman. They also said whether a vehicle is stationary or moving, it is an offence to use devices whilst on a highway. And if drivers dispute the allegations, the court will decide if there is enough evidence to prosecute. Inspector Andy Story of the Joint Operations Road Policing Unit said, "It became apparent that drivers on the opposite carriageway were putting themselves and others in danger by slowing down and taking photos on their mobiles or similar devices of the accident. These drivers were distracted, and all it takes is a split-second lapse in concentration to result in a crash. Our roads policing officers are committed to reducing and preventing road casualties." He said that statistically, drivers are 4 times more likely to crash when using a mobile phone. "We were very lucky we weren't called to an accident on the opposite carriageway as a result," he said. 2 men were hospitalised after the crash, and police are appealing for witnesses following the arrest of a 45-year-old man. Traffic was diverted onto the A33 and to the A272 while the lorry and its contents, notebooks, pens and coasters, were recovered. Motorists in Kingsworthy, Appetsworthy, St Cross, Otterbourne Road and Badger Farm Road all faced congestion. The A34 northbound reopened at 7 p.m.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Atkin, Ivy Jessica Atkin, on the 1st of October, aged 91. Can, Richard David Michael Can, aged 24, on the 22nd of September in northern Sumatra. Coffin, Barbara Coffin, on the 27th of September, aged 89. Cole, Ray Cole, on the 3rd of October, aged 71. Dobson, Molly Dobson, at home on the 25th of September, aged 93. Fraser, Wilfred, known as Bill Fraser, on the 25th of September, aged 90. Hopes, Jean Graham Hopes, known as Ginger, at home on the 1st of October. Hal Piper, Graham Hal Piper, on the 2nd of October. Kalb, Jeffrey Jacob Kalb, in Winchester Hospital on the 29th of September, aged 86. Pearson, Joan Pearson, on the 3rd of September, aged 89. Sawyer, Jean Millie Sawyer, on the 30th of September, aged 88. Simpson, Philip John George Simpson, at home on the 2nd of October, aged 64. Turnbull, Edward John Turnbull, known as Eddie, aged 62, on the 3rd of October. Warren, Pauline Warren, at home, aged 69, on the 1st of October. Wilkinson, Marjorie Ethel Wilkinson, on the 1st of October, in Winchester Hospital, aged 88. And next we have Christian Comment.
Christian Comment, Francis of Assisi, a life of both simplicity and joy. Last Saturday marked the feast of St. Francis of Assisi, whom we usually remember as a lover of peace, preaching to the birds and appealing to the wolf of Gubbio, who was threatening the lives of children. But there is far more to Francis that is relevant for Christian life today. In a new prophetic movement of the organisation Christian Ecology Link, called Joy Is In Enough, a challenge is being made to the current assumption that the economy must continually grow exponentially in order to promote our happiness and well-being. An alternative model of a steady state economy, low growth or no growth, is being proposed. The economic arguments for this are one side of the challenge. The other dimension is for joy in enough to appeal to spiritually to human beings. It is not sufficient to preach for a simpler lifestyle for the sake of the Earth's resources, for reducing our carbon footprint and doing less damage to the environment, as well as transforming excessive patterns of consumption. We have to be able to show that we will all become happier people by doing so, not only on a personal level, but as communities and societies. Enter St. Francis of Assisi, the troubadour, El Poverello, a little poor man of the 13th century, with his lifestyle of simplicity, holy poverty, he called it Lady Poverty, was even considered to be his bride, and he called his followers to the gospel vision of having only strictly what was necessary to eat and to wear, and to give away the rest. The brothers lived a simple life near Assisi, Francis insisting that absolute personal and corporate poverty was the essential lifestyle for the members of his order. But along with this insistence on the rigorous simplicity came his lifestyle of joy. How do we know this? The brothers spent much of their time wandering through the mountainous districts of Umbria, singing and always cheerful, yet making a deep impression on their hearers by their example and sincere encouragement. It was also the way that Francis included all creation in his lifestyle that this joy was manifest. Francis invited all of creation, animals, plants, natural forces, even Brother Sun and Sister Moon, to give honour and praise to the Lord. As the late Pope John Paul II said, "The poor man of Assisi gives a striking witness that when we are at peace with God, we are better able to devote ourselves to building up that peace with all creation, which is inseparable from the peace among all peoples, and to be joyful in so doing."
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing to letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. I think we have about 11 letters this week. Inevitably, there are ones going on about the 20 mile per hour speed limit in Winchester. Silver Hill, of course, also figures. And at the end, there are two thank you letters, though one of them actually has a slight barb in its tail. Anyway, we'll start off with the first letter.
And here it is. Derek Hickman says, "Police have other pressing matters. Sir, I was amazed to read on your front page last week of Councillor Southgate's apparent surprise that the police weren't planning to enforce the new 20-mile-an-hour zones around the city centre. We are constantly hearing about the severe cutbacks the police are suffering these days, and I would suggest they have far more important priorities to address with their reduced resources, particularly as I get the feeling that the increasing volumes of traffic everywhere make it generally pretty difficult to get to 20 miles an hour when driving around the city's central one-way traffic system anyway. As Councillor Southgate is the City Council's portfolio holder for transport, it's worrying that he has this rather naive and out-of-touch reaction. Surely he shouldn't be surprised anyway. Doesn't he have a regular dialogue with the police in his role? Perhaps it's a shame that he didn't check and or ask the question before spending, or should that be wasting, the money to paint all those roundels on the roads and erect all those new 20-mile-per-hour signs. Personally, I would suggest that the best way to cut carbon emissions in the town, if that's part of the justification for this political tick in a box, is for Councillor Southgate to demand and get a review and redesign of the current one-way system so that traffic isn't forced to complete a full and wasteful circular round trip whenever downtown if it doesn't wish to. And for the future, is he the right man to make sure that suitable measures are put in place to cope with the additional traffic in town that will result from the upcoming Barton Farm and other developments?" So writes Derek Hickman, Dean, Downdrove, Littleton.
Colin Joyce, JP, writes, "Sending out the wrong message. Sir, I am somewhat perplexed by the apparent statement of police representatives at a recent town forum meeting that they don't enforce 20 speed limits. Whilst we know that the police are pretty stretched in their duties and must prioritise their enforcement policy, it does seem to be sending out the wrong message to publicly issue such a statement. The responsibility for all of us is to drive safely and courteously, I believe. An underestimated culture. This applies whether you are travelling on a motorway at 70 miles an hour or driving down North Walls on a busy Saturday afternoon. Every day it seems that the M3 is closed due to yet another accident. Those who travel on it know that in most cases this is as a result of driving too fast, too close, and without the slightest concern for the safety of others, including their families and themselves. Speed is an attitude of mind, and believing that driving through vulnerable areas such as city centres at whatever speed one likes is dangerous, unsociable and indeed arrogant. Unfortunately, those who fit into this category clearly need reminding of their social responsibilities. It is called the Highway Code, and our legal system should back this up 100%. Every time one ventures onto the road, there immediately seems to be someone tailgating and anxious to get somewhere before you. Critics of speed restrictions always argue that speed is not the main issue, but it usually is. And the police would be the first to agree. Interestingly, our Police and Crime Commissioner, Simon Hayes, is also quoted in your article saying, "As with all crimes, including the breaking of speed limits, police should use their discretion when to enforce the law." Well, this surely provides the right emphasis and does not leave the community feeling that a green light has been given to those drivers who need no encouragement to continue their narcissistic actions on our ever more congested roads. That's from Colin Joyce, JP of King Somborne.
Keith Webb writes, "Train volunteers to police speed limits. Sir, the council has spent a small fortune putting in place 20 mile per hour speed limit signs, but without enforcement, which we have learned will not be provided by the police, could be a complete waste of money. There is an answer. The council, who initiated the scheme, should buy a few radar speed guns and train volunteers to operate them. The DVLA may not give information about the owners of cars speeding, but perhaps the answer is to publish in the Chronicle each week the car numbers, location and speeds of those offending. Most will probably be local and their neighbours will know who they are. Using computers is not beyond the wit of a man to compile a list of frequent offenders and for the council to apply sanctions, for example, doubling parking fines, etc., for those on the list. All too often, those who offend in one way offend in others. The public might also work out some of their own remedies. Greasy lipstick writing on windscreens, for example, is hard to remove." Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
And, excuse me, this next letter from Bob Lilly says, "Lower limit doesn't help pollution levels. Sir, thank goodness for the good sense shown by the police. Driving through Winchester at busy times where there is much traffic and hence many pedestrians, it is difficult to reach 10 to 15 miles per hour, let alone 20 miles per hour. During off-peak times with hardly any traffic, hence less pedestrians, I have to hover between second and third gear so not to exceed 20 miles an hour, especially down North Walls. This is a ridiculous situation when Winchester wants to reduce pollution. I recently tried to recall the reason for bringing in the 20 miles per hour zone, thinking that there must have been many accidents within the city between cars and pedestrians. However, Councillor Mike Southgate explained to the Chronicle that it was to, quote, create a feeling of ambiance and calm, unquote. What a load of rubbish. Is he not in the real world, or has he never driven a car around Winchester? Cars revving along in second gear at 20 miles an hour hardly brings to mind a calming presence." That letter is from Bob Lilly, Wessex Drive, Winchester.
And this letter is not about the speed limit. It's written by J.R.S. Hart and it's headed, "Bus drivers should know when to stop." "Sir, I am incensed by the reply of the operations manager of Stagecoach to your report of the students at Peter Simmons who were ignored by a bus driver at the bus stop. If a bus driver is unable to tell when someone wishes to catch a bus without them gesticulating, then he, oblique she, is in the wrong job. This is not new, but has been happening for years. I well remember an occasion about 10 years ago when my daughter was in a similar position, waiting to catch a Stagecoach bus in a village outside Winchester to take her to Peter Simmons. She was at the bus stop and watched in horror as the bus sailed by. The manager's response is an insult to our intelligence. And that's from J.R.S. Hart, Hensting Lane, Fisher's Pond.
This is a letter from Barbara Higgins. Micahs haven't been a problem for me. Sir, referring to the letter in the September the 18th edition of the Hampshire Chronicle regarding the noise, etc., from motorbikes on the A32, I have lived in the cottages above the roundabout at Corhampton for over 50 years, and traffic noise has never been a problem. I believe it is only so if you want it to be. As for 120 bikes, Loomis is situated on the crossroads and so has four access points, meaning our bit of the A32 has an average of 30 bikes per Wednesday evening. You probably get your adrenaline rush from driving your two-seater soft-top MG, Mr. Blackmore. Let the bikers have theirs from riding motorbikes and Loomis from selling all those cups of coffee. Why not join them one evening and find out what they are all really about? Barbara Higgins, Warnford Road, Corhampton.
Going against their own policies, says Mark Benzie. Sir, if you live near a proposed council development and are concerned about transport impacts but have been assured by the same council planners, because they make their own planning decisions, that planning conditions will be imposed in mitigation, you would expect them to deliver what was promised. Ha, not if the council is Hampshire County Council. When approving the all-through Westgate School, a planning condition was imposed requiring a number of highways improvements for the safety of the new and existing pupils and for them to be completed, quote, before the occupation of the new primary school and nursery, unquote. The school is open and the nursery occupied for some time without any highways improvements even started. When asked, the council's officer in charge of legal loopholes' response was that since the school is housed in temporary buildings, the planning condition does not apply. Well, that's no comfort to the parents and pupils of the schools or residents in the vicinity. The council say they are monitoring the roads and that there are no adverse effects. That's probably because they are on record as monitoring the wrong roads. Can Hampshire County Council now clarify whether the loophole was intentional or is being abused by a late-running project? Either way, the council has been deceitful, and if they can't be trusted when dealing with a highly scrutinised flagship project, what other loopholes are lurking in council decisions? That letter came from Mark Benzie, Greenhill Road, Winchester.
Next letter is headed Silver Hill Images Are Misleading. It's written by Councillor Kim A. Gottlieb. Sir, the way in which the City Council and the public has been informed about what Silver Hill looks like is almost entirely by way of computer-generated images, CGIs, shown at the exhibitions and on the Council's website, and so on. There is no model of the whole scheme, and few people have the facilities to analyse hundreds of application drawings online. The problem is twofold. First, there are far, far too few of them. There are glimpses of some elevations of blocks A, B and C, but nothing of blocks D, E, F, G, H and J. Secondly, much of what the images that are shown is hogwash. Instead of providing useful information on the architecture, they are composed to sell a cafe culture lifestyle. Strip away the people, as lovely as they all are, and the sunshine, remove the reflection and correct the perspective, and then you might see something of the new buildings proposed. It'd also help if simple things like the position of the sun was accurate. This basic mistake is replicated in the Friar's Gate CGI of Block A, another of the main images frequently displayed. As a result, we are not informed. We are misled. I have suggested to the planning department they ask the applicant to withdraw the applications and to submit with many more CGIs, all of which need to be accurate representations in all aspects. I await to hear back from them. Councillor Kim A. Gottlieb Avington.
Tony Burrows writes, "Learn from the mistakes of others." Sir, at Newbury, a new development has recently been completed similar to that proposed for Silver Hill. It has not proved to be a success either for the town or for the developer, Standard Life. You should always learn from the mistakes of others. Standard Life and Henderson's are financial institutions, not developers. So whose money is being gambled away on Silver Hill? Is it that of investors or pensioners? And do they know? Tony Burrows, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Credit where credit's due, writes Rodney Skinner. Sir, when the electric goes off, the very vocal jump and shout. They seem to forget that the equipment is man-made and can break down at any minute. Likewise, if there is a storm and a tree takes out the wires, whose fault is it? God's. Stop blaming the electric companies. They are doing their best, though some will not agree. On September the 30th, part of Ropley had power stoppage for work to be done. We had over 2 weeks' warning, and the electric company supplied the shop with generators. It was supposed to be out from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The power went off just after 10 a.m. and came back on at about 2:15 p.m. If no one will congratulate them for finishing ahead of time, I will, writes Rodney Skinner, Town Close, Ropley.
Chrissy Stewart writes, new lamps make light pollution worse. Sir, this morning I woke up suddenly. The birds were singing merrily and light was pouring through the curtains. I sprang out of bed, only to catch sight of the clock, which informed me that it was in fact 2 a.m. What was going on? I opened the curtains and realised with a surge of disappointment that the newly installed street lamp was operating for the first time. The bright white light, much taller than the old lamp with its soft orange glow, has literally floodlit our street. What is meant to be a carbon-reducing measure has made light pollution worse, confused wildlife, and must have depressed insomniacs across the county even more. Well done, Hampshire County Council. It's by Chrissy Stewart, Wordsworth Close, Bishopswortham.
Next, we have some items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 150 and 25 years ago. So we'll start off with 200 years ago.
200 years ago, October the 10th, 1814, for benefit of the county hospital, 12th, 13th and 14th of October, the public are respectfully informed that according to the benevolent practice of the choirs of Gloucester, Hereford and Worcester, as well as other musical meetings for charitable purposes, plates to receive contributions be holden by the directors at several doors of the cathedral after each morning performance. Such contributions, being entirely voluntary, are intended for the exclusive benefit of the county hospital.
This is from 100 years ago, October the 8th, 1914. In a letter to his sister, Private G. Turner, Hampshire Regiment, says, "We are getting any amount of hard fighting, but I don't think there ever was a moment when we were least likely to get down in the mouth. It's simply dull, dreary work in the trenches, where there's more mud than glory, and more chills on the liver than cheers. This war will be won by the men who can put up with the most of that sort of thing, and we've got to grin and bear it right to the end."
50 years ago was October the 10th, 1964, and the headline is Postgraduate Education Planned. The medical profession has long recognised the need for a constant tuition on new developments in treatment and the prevention of diseases, and it is to fulfil this need that a chain of centres for postgraduate education has been planned for Hampshire. On Saturday evening, a £14,000 centre at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital was formally handed over to the Group Hospital Management Committee by the Wessex Regional Hospital Board.
And 25 years ago, October the 13th, 1989, councillors delight at Patten decision. East Hampshire District councillors are delighted to learn that the new Secretary of State, Mr. Chris Patten, has removed the threat of 1,000 extra houses and additional industry for the East Hampshire. Early reports from the Department of the Environment indicate that the Minister has bowed to pressure from the District Council and other groups who protested about the additional development included in the proposed modifications to the Mid-Hampshire Structure Plan, First Alteration.
Next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, and that will be followed by First Person, which this week is by George Hayter.
And the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment is entitled, Get Tough with Drivers on the Phone. We've all become aware of so-called rubberneckers, drivers who feel it necessary to slow down at accidents to have a good look at what's going on. Whilst not in the least bit advisable, it is perhaps just human nature. But has Hampshire become witness to a new driver craze? Last week, on the A34, just north of Winchester, police saw no fewer than 60 drivers slowing down to take pictures on their mobile phones of a crash scene on the opposite carriageway. What were they thinking of? As it happened, a lorry had shed its load, but they weren't to know, on approaching the accident, that they may be photographing a grisly scene involving casualties. Many of these drivers will be tracked down through the DVLA, and rightly so. They could be in line for a £100 fine and 3 penalty points for using a handheld phone or similar behind the wheel. But is that sufficient punishment? Statistically, drivers are 4 times more likely to crash when using a mobile phone. It is time drivers realised just how dangerous this practice is. On conviction, they should be banned from the road. That may be the only way they finally get the message.
George Hayter writes, Outstanding they may be, but both were wrong. I'm breathing a sigh of relief because the 2 outstanding politicians of our time have both suffered defeats. Boris Johnson and Alex Salmon are the most able British statesmen of their generation, but both latched onto costly ideas which would have harmed the economy of Hampshire along with the rest of the UK. The leadership ability of Salmon is extraordinary to the extent that the idea of Scottish independence would never have become more than a fringe eccentricity if it wasn't for him. Sure, voters north of the border were increasingly moving leftward of voters in England, but it still needed Salmon's sure-footed oratory to turn that divergence into hunger for permanent separation. If he had persuaded another 6% of his compatriots, firms even in the south of England would have seen their markets shrunk by uncertainty over border issues, not to mention the cost to England, Wales and Northern Ireland of implementing upheavals ranging from administrative redesign to military repositioning. Salmon's defeat came in the form of the no vote to the Scottish referendum. Boris's trouncing was rejection of his harebrained idea to build a new airport in the Thames estuary. That in spite of the fact that we already have a functioning, wealth-creating world hub at Heathrow. The humiliating dismissal of the Blonde One's favourite project came last month from the Airports Commission, set up to identify the best way to relieve economically paralysing congestion at London's airports. Last month, Commission Chairman Sir Howard Davies announced that the estuary plan, dubbed Boris Island, had been removed from his list of realistic solutions. With few residents nearby, the estuary airport could have operated throughout the night, and that, admittedly, would have given it an advantage over competing European hubs. But Sir Howard said that the scheme simply wouldn't happen because of its prohibitive price tag of £90 billion. He also cited the disruption in closing Heathrow and shifting all its staff and operations 50 miles. He said the scheme was also impossible for environmental reasons. The event that caused an American airliner to make an emergency landing on the Hudson River 6 years ago was engine failure caused by ingestion of birds, and that was in urban New York. The estuary airport would have been in wetlands frequented by vast flocks of birds. On Hampshire, the effects of Boris's scheme would have been punitive. Like everyone else in the UK, we would have paid through taxation for the miles of new rail, motorway, bridge and tunnel needed to feed its four runways with passengers. The scheme would have moved Hampshire's gateway to the globe from Heathrow, an hour's drive from Winchester, to a place on the other side of London, doubling the distance from us. That would have been bad for Hampshire firms, and bad for me and you going on holiday.
And now we come to the week's announcements. What's on? For those of you who receive your memory stick tomorrow, that's Saturday, a reminder that on Sunday, October the 12th, it's the Farmers Market here in Winchester. And then next Saturday, there is the Winchester Book Fair, which is being held at the Discovery Centre from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Also on Saturday next week, that's October the 18th, Sparsholt WI are holding a jumble sale at Sparsholt Memorial Hall in Sparsholt from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And also on that Saturday, the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra is giving a concert in the cathedral entitled For the Fallen, with music by Vaughan Williams, Butterworth, Finzi, Coles and Elgar. Tickets from the cathedral box office. There is an exhibition on in the record office, which finishes on Thursday of next week, which is October the 16th. It's entitled In Search of Alfred the Great, and also Reuniting the Stones of Hyde Abbey. And there are two exhibitions presented by the Hyde 900 Group. That's in the Hampshire Record Office in Sussex Street. And then in the Discovery Centre, there's a continuing exhibition which goes on until December, which is called Trenchcoat, which figures an original trench coat from the First World War, which was made by Burberry's of Basingstoke, and also fashion designs inspired by this by students at the Winchester College of Art. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 10th of October, the sun rose at 20 past 7 in the morning and will set at 25 past 6 in the evening. And Wednesday of next week, that's the 15th, sunrise will be at about 7:30 in the morning and sunset at about 6:15 in the evening. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And there's a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it. But please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We now move on to items of general news interest, and the two first extracts that we're going to read relate to topics that were raised in the letters, which we read earlier, one to do with parking around Westgate School, and the other to do, I'm afraid, with the 20 mile per hour speed limit.
Row over school parking as child hurt. Lack of parking at new super school attacked. Fears for youngsters' safety are mounting after a schoolboy was knocked down outside Winchester's first super school. Work at the Westgate School should have been finished by early last month, but was delayed when a protected species of bat were found on site. Now, residents and councillors say that they are concerned that delays to building additional car parking spaces is making the area unsafe for pedestrians. A schoolboy was knocked over by a car in Cheriton Road after school last Friday. A letter to parents, Headmaster Paul Nicholson said, "Fortunately, the emergency services were quickly on hand, along with a number of qualified parents. I am pleased to inform you that the pupil concerned is now safe and well and returned to school. I would like to ask you all to remind your son or daughter the importance of being aware of traffic at all times. Pupils often exit the school site talking to their friends or listening to their iPods and can be distracted. We all know that this is incredibly dangerous. The matter is also made worse by the amount of traffic outside the school at the end of each day. I would ask parents and carers who are picking their children up to kindly park away from the main entrance to the school. There has been much dispute about whether Hampshire County Council, which is building the school, has breached planning conditions by delaying the building of parking spaces. A nearby resident who asked not to be named said, there has been a big increase in traffic which we have to walk through. The school is attracting parents from much further afield and the parking bays have not been built to cater for them. Once finished, the school will be 420-place two-form primary school on the same site as the existing secondary school. 60 reception pupils have already started, based in temporary accommodation on site. City Councillor Martin Todd said, the parking spaces delay is a disgrace. I think it's really bad faith, he said. It just feels like a Weasley thing to do. It may not be the final school buildings, but the traffic was starting on the first day of term, so the measures to deal with the extra traffic should also be available from the first day of term. I am very concerned that there has been a road accident, and I will ask council officers what they can do immediately to improve the safety of the area. At the full county council meeting last month, Councillor Todd asked Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, if he would apologise to residents for the traffic problems. Councillor Edgar said, I certainly won't apologise for anything of this nature. Any project can be subject to delays of this sort. The Chilbolton Avenue side has been monitored and so far there have not been any problems observed or, to our knowledge, complained about. We will do everything that we can to make sure that these works are in place as soon as possible. Nobody from the Westgate School or Hampshire County Council was available for further comment at the time of going to press.
£90,000 cost of city's 20-mile-per-hour zones. Winchester City Centre's 20-mile-per-hour speed limit has cost taxpayers £90,000. The cap, which was introduced to the city centre and parts of Hyde in August, was funded by a government grant to Hampshire County Council. Police representatives revealed that they would not enforce the limit at a recent Winchester Town Forum meeting. Councillor Dominic Hiscock told the Hampshire Chronicle that it was a mystery why police will not enforce the speed limit, but defended the £90,000 outlay. The streets of Winchester were designed for horse and cart, he said. They were not designed for cars and lorries going around at 30 miles an hour. The difference it makes to people living in the city and visitors is huge. Tory councillor Ian Tait said that the force was never definitive about prosecuting speeding drivers, but he had been told at community policing meetings that it would not be a priority. It was my understanding that the police were never intending to enforce the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, he said. The Liberal Democrats may say they didn't know that, but they obviously weren't asking the right questions. Councillor Sue Nelms said that police knew the Liberal Democrats were fighting to introduce the limit, but never told them it wouldn't be enforced. She said to find out now when we've already won all of the battles is somewhat disheartening. She assumed that police would prosecute speeders, she added, because the county council won the grant as part of a government drive to introduce 20-mile-an-hour limits nationwide. Councillor Jim Maynard said, "The basis of bringing rules in is not whether police are going to prosecute people, but because the rules are a good thing." Tory councillor Robert Sanders said that Liberal Democrats had wasted taxpayers' money with a political imperative. The Lib Dems, he added, insist on implementing it without the evidence, and now we have the muddle.
Alleged sexual abusers won't be charged. Not enough evidence found against ex-boys' school staff. Five former members of staff will escape criminal charges over sexual abuse allegations at a Winchester children's home in the 1960s and the 1970s, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. The Crown Prosecution Service has decided there was not enough evidence to prosecute, and in one case it was not in the public interest as the accused was elderly and in poor health. A number of other accused men were found to have died. But Hampshire County Council, which ran the former Winton House in Andover Road, an approved school for boys, could still face compensation claims from at least 30 men for alleged abuse, including rape. Winton House, now demolished, was a Home Office approved school for boys aged between 11 and 16. Children were sent there by the juvenile courts and social services. A major criminal investigation was reopened in April 2013 after the Chronicle revealed former pupils had launched compensation claims for sexual and physical abuse that prompted other victims, now aged in their 50s and 60s, to contact the police.
Villages bid to avoid future floods. A village hit by flooding earlier this year is taking steps to prevent a repeat this winter by raising fears that problems could be passed downstream. The A272 at Bramdean was closed around a month in February in the worst floods for decades. A meeting last Wednesday heard that the ditches are being cleared for the first time in 30 to 40 years and the County Council is putting in bigger pipes to increase capacity to be completed before Christmas. But a villager from Cheriton is worried that moving the water more quickly through Bramdean will cause them bigger problems. Pat Lawrence, Cheriton's flood warden, said, "Our main concern is that if the capacity is increased upstream at Bramdean, that will affect us. If we have a wet autumn, we could have problems." Mr. Lawrence wants the county to alter the three bridges in Cheriton to reduce the way they act as dams, holding back water to cause flooding, as happened in the 2000 and 2001 and this year. Admiral's Bridge needs a new culvert after utility work caused the pipe to collapse, said Mr. Lawrence. Matthew Morton, chairman of Bramdean and Hinton Ampler Parish Council, a local farmer, said Bramdean and Cheriton should solve the problem together. "I think there is an opportunity to hold the water back before Cheriton in the water meadow at Hinton Marsh. A sluice could be fitted and it could hold a lot of water," he added. Andrew Gillam, Environmental Agency Flood and Coastal Risk Manager, said, "We are working closely with Hampshire County Council, who are leading the investigations into options to reduce flood risk in the village."
"Please know my son is a good man." Father's emotional appeal from hospital bed. The Hampshire father of a journalist being held hostage by Islamic State militants has made an emotional appeal from his hospital bed to release his son from captivity. Paul Cantley's son, John, is a photojournalist who was working independently in Syria. He has been held captive since 2012. Last Friday, it emerged the family of the 43-year-old, who appeared in a series of propaganda videos released by the insurgents, live in Droxford. The appeal came hours before a video was released, apparently showing the beheading of captured aid worker Alan Henning, from Manchester. Paul Cantley, 81, delivered his heart-breaking plea in a video, having undergone surgery for laryngeal cancer, speaking of his family's despair and helplessness. Begging with those holding his son captive, he said, "To those holding John, please know that he is a good man. He sought only to help the Syrian people, and I ask you from all that is sacred to help us to allow him to return safely to those he loves and those who love him." Speaking with the help of a voice aid and holding his fingers against his throat, Mr. Cantley said the family experienced great relief when they saw John alive in a televised broadcast, but that feeling quickly turned to despair. Hostage Mr. Cantley, who has worked for newspapers including the Sunday Times, was seized in northern Syria, where he had been working as an independent photojournalist. His father said that John had been seeking out the true story of the suffering of the Syrian people and ensuring the world was made aware of their plight. Mr. Cantley said he and his family are trying to communicate with the Islamic State to deliver an important message regarding John, and said they can only hope that it has been received, but they have had no response.
24-hour consultant care at New Centre. Hospital service will be a first, meeting told. A new emergency hospital set to be built between Winchester and Basingstoke will provide unprecedented 24-hour consultant care, a meeting heard. Health chiefs said that the comprehensive care was unheard of in the NHS and would not require an increase in overall staffing across the region's hospitals. Patients will only travel to the new facility by ambulance, bosses told Hampshire Hospitals Trust Roadshow last week. The Trust runs Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Andover Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital. Dr. Andrew Bishop, the Trust's Chief Medical Officer, said the new hospital, which does not yet have a location, will be a central hub for consultants in emergencies. "Our pledge is that in that hospital you will always be treated by a consultant, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That is unheard of in the health service." Addressing public concerns about staffing in the new hospital, Dr. Bishop said that merging intensive care units in Basingstoke and Winchester would prevent an increase and help them to meet their pledge on 24-hour care. He said, "By operating like that, the number of staff that we have at present would actually be sufficient. That's extraordinary. There will actually be slightly fewer intensive nurses needed because at the moment we have an intensive care unit at both hospitals." The Trust currently employs 5,000 people, 250 of whom are consultants. "Nobody really will be required to go there," Dr. Bishop said. "It will be a place where you are taken. If you're going to hospital for something and you are getting yourself there, you will go to Winchester Hospital. There will always be the facility there to assess you and make sure you are safe." Chief Executive Mary Edwards said the Trust would develop transport infrastructure for visitors, patients and staff. "We have to make sure there's a very good travel plan that enables all those groups of people to be able to get to this new place," she said. "The key challenge is for close relatives who have gone with patients will think, where am I? How will I get back home? We need to make sure that we've got a system in place to enable distressed relatives to get back home after that." After the meeting, Dr. Bishop said that an estimated 30 or 40 consultants would be on duty at the new hospital at any one time. The Trust hopes that the new hospital could open in the autumn of 2018, but bosses told the meeting that costs would increase the longer it takes to build.
Restaurant serves up French dishes in city. 40 jobs will be created when a national restaurant chain opens in Winchester. Cote Brasserie is taking over from the former Moss Bros site in the High Street next to the Man on the Horse statue. The refurbishment, which is expected to cost close to £1 million, will be complete for the opening in late January. It is another boost for the Winchester restaurant scene, coming just after Hugh Fernley Whitting's stall opened River Cottage and Rick Stein recently announced that he was moving into the High Street premises vacated by Jamie Oliver. The restaurant will seat around 130 customers, serving traditional French cuisine, including creme caramel, Breton chicken and Chateau Neuf de Pape. Harold Samuelson, Joint Managing Director, said, "We are really looking forward to opening in town. We have long thought that Winchester would be a perfect setting for Cote, as it fits with our ethos of offering high-quality food and service at great value prices. The chain is also opening a new site in Dorchester, its first in Dorset." Neil Masters, the interior designer for the Winchester project, said, "It has a very broad appeal. It's a very established brand and they do what they do very, very well. It is a Grade 2 listed building and we hope that that will shine through. It will have beautiful parquet flooring, marble running throughout, just a very French brasserie theme. It's what Winchester needs, really," he said. "Winchester already boasts of the first Hotel de Vin, but celebrating its 20th anniversary this year, and a Michelin-starred restaurant, The Black Rat."
Colourful celebration at Cathedral. The celebration of the annual Bounty of Nature filled Winchester Cathedral Close last weekend. The church in recent years has held a major festival to mark the end of the annual harvest in Hampshire. There was a farmer's market, a mobile farm, craft demonstrations and stands from country-based organisations. A horse and carriage gave rides around the close and there were displays of falconry, poultry and beekeeping. The festival climaxed with a special service in the cathedral, including an address by ITV newsman Alistair Stewart, who interviewed three representatives of the Hampshire farming community. There was free entry into the cathedral over the weekend. Excuse me. The big highlight for local children was the annual scarecrow competition, which saw families and schools produce a wide range of straw people, which were dotted around the cathedral's pillars and pews. Meanwhile, a 1957 Ferguson tractor chugged its way throughout the grounds. And there are some lovely photographs accompanying this piece. There is a picture of three-year-old Beatrice Pike, with unusually coloured cauliflowers, I mean purple and pink and goodness knows what. There are two sisters, Lily and Iris Wakeley, aged 8 and 5 respectively, enjoying a ride on the 1957 Ferguson tractor I mentioned. And finally, there are a lot of people in a carriage enjoying the horse and cart rides round the close.
Hugh's sustainability bid for new eatery. TV chef Hugh Fernley Whittingstall wants to make his new Winchester restaurant more sustainable, he told the Hampshire Chronicle. Plans to make the River Cottage canteen more eco-friendly may see the reintroduction of hydroelectric power. The £1 million revamp of the former Abbey Mill was completed at the start of last month. Now the River Cottage owner said he would like to make the best of what the building has to offer. "There's one thing we still hope to do, and that's the hydroelectric project," he said. "But it's not straightforward. The technology exists and the frame exists. This used to be a working mill. That we can get something up and running that would help us in our sustainability plan. It would be a lovely thing to do, but we've got to bear in mind that people want to come and eat and hear themselves talk, not just a loud whirring. It's encouraging that we might be able to get that part of it going." The sustainable plans also extend to the restaurant's food, which may see fresh fish added to the menu. Jill Meller, group head chef, is in talks with Winchester head chef Mark Price and manager Phil Bendel about keeping wild trout in the mill's waterway. "It may seem a bit of a pipe dream, but if there's a way we can do it, then we would like to," added Mr. Fernley Whittingstall. River Cottage was formally opened at a wine and canapé evening last Tuesday.
Bid to ease Exmouth's car parking. Steps are being taken to reduce the parking chaos caused by people attending the Christmas market at the cathedral. The annual event has become hugely popular, sometimes attracting 50 coaches a day. Councillor Fiona Maither told the full council last Wednesday that in streets near the cathedral, people were parking in resident-only zones. She called for the enforcement against the rogue parkers. When the market is on, residents find that they can't go out and come back because they can't find anywhere to park until the market is closed. It is quite a restriction on their freedom of movement. Council leader Rod Humby said measures were being taken to ease the problem across the city. Parking bays in the middle of the Broadway will be suspended to make easier for coaches to turn. Park and ride will be enhanced over the five-week Christmas period, so they run every 10 minutes instead of the usual 15. The park and ride stop outside Abbey House will also be temporarily relocated to give more space for coaches. A new free park and ride service will operate on Sundays from the site near Bushfield. The City Council is looking at using the Serco site at Bar End as a temporary coach park.
Dad develops tracking device for his children. A dad from Hursley has developed a new tracking device aimed at keeping tabs on his children. Nick Hopkins, 51, of Main Road, said he designed the transponder along with his colleague Pavel Masjik from their company Ratlake Technologies to make sure he knew where his children were without hassling them. He said knowing where his son Max, 16, and daughter Alex, 13, were gave him and his wife Nadia a sense of comfort. He said, "It was 3 years ago when I started this and I had two young children. What I didn't want to do was create something that simply allowed me to know where they are. It's not something to use to stalk. It was more around using location and getting essential information. For me, it was around both of our two kids. They were getting off the school bus, their phones were flat or they'd forgot to call us, so we were wondering exactly where they were." Now Mr. Hopkins is hoping to get the project firmly off the ground as he launches a new crowdfunding site in a bid to raise £10,000. He said, "I have always been interested in technology, having worked for Virgin and IBM. When I left those companies, I wanted to do product development, and location was something I was interested in as GPS began to grow. I thought a tracking device would be a good product to do. At the time, Apple had just launched the iPhone, and prior to that it was difficult to create new apps. It's not spying, it's so I know people who are interested can find me. When my daughter went to Normandy on a school trip, I knew she got the ferry, and when she was on the coach back, all the parents were hanging around the school for an hour while I knew where she was. I could plan where and when I would collect her." He claims the device will have a longer battery life than GPS systems and will be more reliable than working from Wi-Fi, and says it can even be used to keep tabs on luggage when travelling abroad. "I can just look at the phone, so it allows me to keep in touch without phoning them," he said. "Our view is, it's always better to know where approximately someone is than not at all."
Crackdown on laser pens aimed at planes. A haul of more than 100 laser pens was seized at an Eastleigh home in a police crackdown on people targeting planes with the dangerous devices. A man was arrested after a total of 107 laser pens were discovered by officers at a house close to Southampton Airport flight path. It comes after an increase in the misuse of laser pens in the area, with 7 incidents reported in the past 3 months, which have led to 5 arrests. Now police are warning people of the potentially catastrophic dangers of such devices if they are targeted at planes and helicopters, and urge parents not to buy them as toys for their children. The most recent incident saw four commercial passenger planes and a police helicopter targeted by a powerful green laser being used close to the Itchen Bridge. A 26-year-old man from Totten was arrested at the scene on suspicion of offences under the Air Navigation Order. Superintendent James Fulton, who is in charge of policing in Southampton, said a large number of these incidents involve children whose parents believe that lasers are a suitable toy. Lasers are not toys and could also lead to serious visual impairment for life if used in an inappropriate way.
Cheesfoot Head crash kills driver. A 24-year-old woman has died after a crash on the major road outside Winchester. The woman from Waterlooville was pronounced dead at the scene after her Vauxhall Corsa collided with a lorry on the A272 bend near Cheesfoot Head on Tuesday morning. The lorry driver, a 40-year-old man, was treated for shock and discharged at the scene. A police spokesman at the crash said that no arrests were likely to be made. The lorry was believed to be heading east away from Winchester, with the car going in the opposite direction. The A272 was closed for 5 hours, causing long tailbacks, and reopened at about 1:15 p.m. It is the fourth fatality in the Cheesfoot Head area since 2001.
Scouts splashing time at Jamboree fundraiser. Toggles on and soaked up to the nines, members of the 9th Winchester Scout Group were only too pleased to scrub a car or two. Cold and common girls and boys waxed and polished until their fingers turned pruney at their charity car wash in a bid to raise over £300 in aid of the 2015 World Scout Jamboree. The group hopes to send three participants to the international event in Japan in the new year to join other scouts and leaders from all over the globe. Group scout leader Steve Cox said, "Across the Winchester Scouting District, it has been lucky enough to have 19 participants attending the worldwide Jamboree, which makes us one of the strongest contingents in Hampshire. Thanks must go to all the fundraisers and the Colden Common Community Centre for the use of their facilities during our car wash fundraising event." And there's a photograph here of these brave boys, I can't see any girls, but brave boys cleaning a police car with a high jet washer hose thingamy. So let's hope they did more harm than good. Or no, more good than, I beg your pardon, more good than harm.
Oh dear. Police warning to drink driving teens. You will get caught. That's the message from Hampshire's Road Police to teenagers contemplating drink driving. It comes as shock figures reveal that children as young as 14, 3 years under the legal age for driving on public roads, are being caught drink driving in the county. The revelation has raised concern among children's charities, which have described the stats as terrifying. Figures show that in 2008, 2009 and 2011, drivers aged 14 were caught drink driving by Hampshire Police. Hampshire is one of the top five drink driving hotspots for under 18s in the country, with 276 offenders caught between 2008 and 2013. Of those, 74 were under the age of 16. The figures were obtained by in-car camera provider Nextbase, which said that the total number of drink drive incidents had fallen year on year, but a number of areas had seen an increase from 2012 to 2013. The worst was Greater Manchester, where 409 under-18s were arrested. The youngest offender in the country was just 11 when they were apprehended in the Thames Valley area in 2011. Despite the startling figures, Hampshire police said teenage arrests were dropping between 2012 and 2013 when compared to the figure for 2008. Hampshire Constabulary Sergeant Bob Hurd said, "Many teenagers understand that if you choose to drink or drug drive, we will catch you. You will go to court and you will lose your licence. We are determined to reduce casualties on our road, and our success in identifying people who would drive while impaired through drink or drugs is just one element of our work to do so. Each of these arrests potentially represents a life saved on our roads, and this research demonstrates that we are detecting those offences effectively." Interestingly, the figures for 2012-2013 are significantly reduced by more than two-thirds compared to the figure for 2008. This ongoing decline seems to demonstrate that our educational messages to young drivers are being heard clearly. One such example is our Safe Drive, Stay Alive series of educational representations in colleges and community centres across the county. These take place every November, with the first of these being held at King's Community Church in Hedge End on November the 13th. Jackie Ballard, Chief Executive at Alcohol Concern, said, "The fact that young people have been illegally driving while under the influence of alcohol is terrifying. The government has to get a grip on the fact that young people are bombarded with alcohol advertising, which tells them drinking is a normal and positive thing to do, and it is often available at pocket money prices. They can start to change this culture by introducing a minimum unit pricing and restricting alcohol advertising."
City Council accused of complacency on recycling. Winchester Civic Chiefs were accused of complacency over the authorities' stuttering recycling rates. Councillor Leslie Kelsey Lerney, Liberal Democrat leader, said the Winchester average was 34.4% compared to the national average of 43.2%. The target is for half of the discarded material to be recycled by 2020. She said the meeting of the full council last Wednesday that the Conservative administration was maintaining a high level of complacency, but Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for the built environment, said Winchester was the fourth best performing authority in Hampshire. Next year, Winchester Action on Climate Change is launching the Great Waste Project to encourage more people to recycle.
Station plan to expand travel options. Plans to help people get to Winchester Railway Station more easily on foot, by bicycle or bus have been agreed by Hampshire County Council. The idea is to ease congestion, with the station becoming more popular with commuters who mainly arrive by car. Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, formally adopted the plan at his recent decision day. Surveys were distributed to approximately 800 passengers at Winchester Station, and an online survey helped inform the plans. Local councillors, South West Trains, Network Rail and local bus operator Stagecoach have all contributed to the final station travel plan. Councillor Woodward said, "This station travel plan will contribute to improving and expanding the travel choices for people getting to the station by helping to ensure practical measures are delivered. Many people are beginning to consider the advantages of walking, cycling or using the bus, and the different health, money-saving and time-saving benefits these can bring. My journey is all about making it easier for people to work out whether their local journey in their own car could be made as conveniently by bus, bike or by car sharing instead. The Winchester Station Travel Plan will help to support this work, offering residents a travel option they may not have considered before."
Record turnout for Rotary's Clarendon Run. More than 1,000 marathon runners trekked to Winchester on an ancient countryside route once used by England's royalty. Record numbers ran the cross-country Clarendon Marathon from Salisbury to Winchester last Sunday. The 17th annual run along 26 miles of the old Clarendon Way from Salisbury was complemented by a relay and a half marathon starting in Broughton. The race was almost entirely off-road and followed some country paths which had not changed since they were travelled by ancient kings and queens. It was a marathon number 100 for veteran runners Steve Goodwin and Bob Maguire. Mr. Goodwin, 59, of Goringsfield, Tegdown, said, "If someone had told me I would run 100 marathons, I would never have believed them." He told family, "Never, ever again," after his first marathon in 1987. Race organiser J.J. Heath Caldwell of Winchester Rotary said, "It was a fantastic day for it. Well done to all the runners who took part and to the 250 marshals and volunteers who helped make it all happen. Marathon winner Pierre Capdevila from Harlow crossed the finishing line in 2 hours, 43 minutes and 41 seconds. James Webster of Winchester and District Athletics Club won the male half marathon. Clubmate Francesca Eddy was the third fastest woman in the full marathon." And as a PS, you might like to know that a team from Winchester Talking Newspaper did not take part in the Clarendon Run, but they did help as volunteers.
I have another fundraiser. Paris Ride raised funds for the homeless. Winchester man Jerry O'Keefe has completed a bold journey from London to Paris to raise money for a homeless charity. The trustee cycled for 3 days last month in a bid to help Trinity, the shelter for vulnerable and homeless people in Winchester. The 68-year-old has so far raised £1,800 of his £2,500 target to help pay for the new IT system at the Trinity Centre, but said that the ride was not without its challenges as he faced the perilous Parisian traffic. "We finished at the Champs-Élysées at about 7 p.m. and I think it was the toughest day," he said. "We found our way into Paris amid all the chaos. It was pretty tough as we did 55 miles and it was pretty hot, about 25 degrees. We need help to replace the IT structure. It underpins the entire programme and is vitally important to the centre."
Art Society celebrates 50th anniversary. Alresford Art Society has celebrated its 50th anniversary with a party for its members and past chairman. Complete with a birthday cake decorated with a palette, members and guests enjoyed wine and canapés at the Alresford Recreation Centre. Chairman Sue Gentry said, "There were numerous organisations created in Alresford in the mid-1960s. Sadly, there is no archive of the early years of the Society, as boxes of records were destroyed on the death of a secretary in the 1980s. And there is little to tell us about the first 20 years, apart from the odd Hampshire Chronicle clipping and some old programmes." One of the guests was Derek Drew, who now lives in Southsea and was chairman in the 1980s. He recalled how early annual exhibitions were held in the Forge in Broad Street before moving to the current exhibition space in the community centre. Glasses were raised in memory of Alan Charlton, who with Ursula Oxley were among the first members of the fledgling society which met over Lawrence Oxley's bookshop in Broad Street some 50 years ago. And there is a photograph here of Art Society Chairman Sue Gentry cutting the birthday cake and surrounded by past chairmen, the names of whom are Graham Marsden, Wendy Starforth Hill, Anne Wadman and Derek Drew.
Cathedral service for former bishop. The funeral of former Bishop of Winchester, Michael Scott Joint, took place in the cathedral. The 71-year-old died at the end of last month, just 3 years after his retirement from the role.
PCC defends role after Labour attack. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner has defended his role following Labour's announcement that it would scrap the post if the party wins the next general election. Shadow Home Secretary Yvette Cooper said people should vote for the police commanders instead. Ms Cooper said commissioners had not worked and abolishing them would have saved £50 million, which could be spent on frontline policing. She said to spend all that money on something where so few people vote when you could put that money back into policing is wrong. But Hampshire PCC Simon Hayes said that his position was a force for good. He said, frankly, Ms Cooper's policy takes us back to the old central control policing model operated by the previous government, not interested in local people as far from Westminster. I think it's right that through PCCs, the public, should they wish, now have a direct influence on the policing they receive. It's modern and increasingly attractive. People who find out about my role see it not just about hiring and firing the chief constable.
Hospital staff to go on strike. Staff at three hospitals in Hampshire, including Winchester, will go on strike next week. Members of Union Unison will take industrial action on Monday at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and at Basingstoke and Andover hospitals. A spokesman for the union said members will strike to, quote, campaign for David Cameron to honour the recommendations of the pay review body, unquote. They will also be supported on the picket lines by members of the Unite Union and the Royal College of Midwifery. The strike action will take place from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Paul sniffs out a new career in gin production. A Winchester man has traded in his London-based career to make and sell his own gin. Paul Bowler of Upper Brook Street has started Winchester Distillery to bring a taste of local produce to bars and restaurants. His new product, Twisted Nose Dry Gin, was first made in May and is now a refined product made of lavender, Alresford watercress and New Forest water, with an alcohol by volume of 40%. Despite it being in production for less than 6 months, it has already been snapped up by some well-known names, including Hotel de Vin, The Green Man, Corner House and most notably the new River Cottage Canteen, he said. Now, Mr. Bowler, who only makes 50 bottles at a time, says the demand is increasing at such a rate he knows giving up the high-powered city job has been worth it. I spent 20 years working in the city in IT consultancy, mainly in banking and finance, he said. After 20 years, I'd had enough. Gin is always something I've enjoyed. I think it would be nice to have something truly local, even down to the scent. Mr. Bowler said he knew he had created the right concoction when his wife and head taster, Renata, smiled pleasantly following weeks of wine tasting. Now, he's also added local wine merchants to his list of clients, including the Naked Grape and Wine Utopia, and is in talks about supplying Majestic warehouses right across Hampshire. He hopes to create a new product soon, the Bar Masters Blend, which at 52% will be one of the strongest gin products on the market. His aim is to develop purely Hampshire products celebrating the county's resources. It's creating something from Hampshire for Hampshire, really, he added. It has its own identity. Gins have a very distinctive taste, and of course, there are global brands, but there is a growing demand for regional produce, particularly in London. I want Winchester to have its own something of its own.
On that rather convivial note, we will conclude our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who are Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Norma York,
goodbye,
John Richards,
goodbye,
and Peter Lydiard,
goodbye,
and from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.